Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, professors, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Lee Newcomb and Stephanie Hitt, and Democrats R. Craig Sauter and Dan Walsh. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on State Street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And, of course, tonight we're going to be talking about the debate that took place last week. Spend a little time on that and dissecting it, as everyone has been doing since the debate ended. And also, we are going to be looking ahead to the debate against the coming up Thursday between Vice President Biden and Paul Ryan. But first of all, by the way, we should mention that three of our four guests this evening that you'll hear actually attended the Beyond the Beltway party that we held here. And we did, immediately after the debate, we did an instant analysis of the guests. We had about 50 guests, and it was amazing because the instant analysis that was offered by our mixed group of Republicans and Democrats, really basically, that's exactly the way it evolved later that evening when I went home and started to watch all the analysis on television. It was pretty much dead on, with a lot of Obama supporters being somewhat disappointed at the president's performance, and a lot of Republicans feel revved up because of the aggressiveness of Mitt Romney in the debate. Dan Walsh is going to start us out this evening. He's one of our Democrats, longtime listener and viewer of the show, making your first appearance on the program, a public defender for Cook County, where this broadcast comes from. You're a Democrat, you're a proud Democrat, but you thought the president was off his game last week.
Well, I think the president was himself, and I think the president didn't really come with a game. I thought he came with an approach to listen and to be contemplative, and what happened as a result of that is it did look like he lost the debate, and the clear winner of the debate was Mitt Romney, who I would refer to as the Manchurian candidate, because in this case, I think he clearly got a chance to listen to his handlers and listen to the Bill Clinton speech, and this is the first time we heard Romney talk about the middle class, said he didn't care about rich people, and really basically said he would keep Obamacare, all the good stuff. So I think we heard from the Manchurian candidate by the name of Mitt Romney, and he was the clear winner.
Stephanie Hitt also joins us. She was at the party.
Yeah, and I would agree with Dan. I think we did get to see the real Obama. We also got to see the real Mitt Romney. I mean, for the first time, we've gotten to see two men be unscripted and unfiltered, and we got to see who the real ones were. And I think we got to see Obama as the somewhat disengaged and almost professorial, self-important. And then whereas we saw a Romney who mastered the facts, understands the issues, and was able to connect the dots finally in public for the first time. So I would agree with you, Dan, that we saw the real people there. And I think for the first time, the Americans did as well.
Craig Sauter, what did you think of the debate?
Well,
you're a Democrat.
I wanted to come to your party, but I wanted also to watch this.
Did you bring a note? Did you bring a note from your doctor?
I was not sick, but I did want to watch this in isolation. I imagine people were cheering on both sides when you have a group like that, and I wanted to get a chance to see what I actually thought on my own. And I thought it was a very serious debate. I thought it was a good debate. I thought that the president said that he wanted to have a substantive policy discussion, and I think that that's what it was. When I walked away from it, my wife was the only person who I was watching it with. She thought Obama won because she favored Obama's point of view, but I thought that it was pretty much a wash. I thought that certainly Romney did a great job on his own in terms of presenting a new image of himself and being able to successfully move towards the middle on some of the policies that he was being attacked on. But I thought and I reread the transcript today as well, and there was important points being made on both sides.
Lee Newcomb is another Democrat. He was at the party as well. Your reaction to the debate?
I couldn't agree more with the analysis that we saw the real Romney and we saw the real Obama. And that's the thing that bothers me in terms of watching the Democrats this week, is everything is about trying to attack Romney as an excuse or finding excuses for Obama. Why do we not say, gee, I wonder if we really did see the real Obama and the real Romney? I think that's what we saw.
Now, after the debate, I asked you, I said, because you were one of the most conservative Republicans that we had in our group, I asked you if there were things that Romney said that would drive your conservative friends crazy, and you said yes. What were they?
Well, interestingly, my reaction immediately to you was, yeah, the education comment, because conservatives typically have always wanted to shut down the Department of Education because federal education expenditures have nothing to do with improving education at the local level, which is controlled by local citizens and local school boards. And Romney affirmed the Department of Education, said he wouldn't do it. But interestingly to me, you saw my reaction, Bruce. I reacted instantly to that, as I'm sure a lot of real conservatives did. But you haven't heard a whisper about that all week, have you?
No.
Because the Republicans were so thrilled with the way it came out on his performance that I think everybody said, let's not criticize a good thing. Just stay out of that.
Now, the one thing that I heard that I knew was going to be repeated again and again and again, and that was the comments about PBS and Big Bird. I mean, I don't know why he volunteered that. Mm-hmm. He sort of offered it up. I mean, Big Bird has been on the chopping block, no pun intended, about every 4 years when Republicans like to bring it up. But again, that was sort of brought up. But I don't think it's not going to change any votes.
No, I don't think that that's a big issue. It did show Romney probably at his weakest point is when he starts to think for himself on his feet in front of people. He's not good at that. I think.
Or when he's asked for a specific.
Yeah, and when he's asked for a specific.
If you got to cut the budget, I mean, the first place you look, at least Republicans look, is PBS.
Well, yeah, and when you look at what PBS is as a part of the federal budget, it's a very, very tiny, tiny, infinitesimal, and it's really just a political issue rather than anything that would even help us in get out of any kind of deficit. So I saw a real weakness on Romney's part in that, as far as that goes.
Stephanie?
Well, it's interesting because when you listen to what he said, I like Big Bird. I just don't want to have to borrow from China to pay for it. And I think that's one thing that we saw in Romney consistently was that he made his point.
Is that true?
But he gave
a
good reason.
Is that true? Are we really borrowing from China for Big Bird?
Well, we're borrowing from China for something.
Actually, we're not. So, you know, we're choosing not to raise taxes on the wealthy class, and we are selling a China bond. So, okay, that's different than saying, gee, China, can I borrow money so that I can put on a Big Bird show? That's one political way of saying it. I think that's important. The fact is we still have a government and we still have a place that we want to call America, that we want to run this place and have it run in a proper way. And, yes, we should consider, what is a proper way to spend the money. We are not borrowing money to put on a Big Bird show. That's basically what he's saying.
I would agree that in that comment, he sort of oversimplifies the situation. However, what he's saying is...
We're going to hold on the however because we have to pause. 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's head to telephone calls right away. Let's head to Austin, Texas, where Bill is listening to us on KLBJ. Nice to hear from Texas tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I thought the debate was over and Romney scored a TKO, which left Obama reeling for the rest of the night when he refused to go along with Obama's one study about the tax plan as opposed to the other six studies that showed that it was feasible. And after that, I don't think Obama could ever bring up another topic because he was pretty much knocked out and reeling after that. I don't think it was the altitude. I don't think it was drugs or anything like that. He probably knew about the other six studies, but since Gibbs and Plouffe and Axelrod had only briefed him on the one study, he wasn't really ready for Romney to say what he'd been saying all along.
What do you think? I want to get everybody's reaction to what you said, but I want to kind of expand the question to you. What do you think you saw with the president? Did you see someone that was not up to the battle of the night? Someone who can't think on his feet? What did you see through the television lens?
I saw somebody that was very well prepared, but when the first question went wrong about the tax plan, it just sort of like put his brain into brain lock. I've known an awful lot of people like that are not necessarily low average IQ, but once somebody contradicts what they know is a fact and they're all ready for, they got nothing. They're just, you know.
Well, as part of it, I want to get Craig's response. Part of it is it when you're the president of the United States, he hasn't had a lot of press conferences. I mean, he hasn't been challenged. This is a guy who hasn't been challenged for a long time.
Yeah,
and he was challenged. That's all. That was the bottom line.
Well, that's true as well. But as I said initially, I don't think we saw, quote, the real Obama. I think there's lots of sides to the president, and the American people have seen him performing in all sorts of environments for
maybe 7 years.
Well, he wasn't the
teleprompter Obama.
It wasn't his best show. He was low energy. If anything, he was low energy. But the things that he said were right on target. He did get thrown off a little bit when Mitt changed his position again, but he certainly was thinking on his feet. For example, he labeled that whole gambit his secret plan. He won't tell us where the cuts are, and that I'm not so sure that was pre-prepared. There were plenty of instances when he was thinking on his feet.
Stephanie?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I found the tax discussion just incredibly eye-opening for many of us. First of all, not just on the issue of, you know, you're misstating my plan, but also the fact is Romney was able to describe the principles based that his tax plan involved. And one of the things that Obama really struggled with is he didn't seem to understand the principles of it and be able to connect those principles to how they would relate to jobs and economic growth. And a lot of people are out there, you know, the pundits and all the different people are out there rallying, defending the president now, saying, oh, Romney lied about his tax plan. But one of the important things, and now we're starting to hear the math doesn't add up, but what that does is it opened up the discussion of the principles, and I think Romney explained it really well. He was able to say, this is the principle I'm working with.
Which principle?
What did you think? What did you think of the way he handled that? That element that Stephanie was talking about, Dan.
Well, I think what I think it is, it's difficult to respond to someone who hasn't really stated what their plan is, and that's the problem I think with Romney. He's having a tax plan is not about connecting principles, as Stephanie said. It's about really just saying where are these cuts going to come from, who's going to get a break on the taxes, and who's not going to get a break. Who's going to have to pay more, and who's going to have to pay less? And he hasn't said that. And what people really are concerned about, especially, is the home mortgage deduction. Now, whether he could ever get that through, whether he could ever get that taken away is another thing. But is that on the table as a part of his tax plan? If it is, then he doesn't have a tax plan. Romney doesn't have a tax plan, if that's true, because it'll never get through. So he is at this point where he's not really stating a plan. He's got great principles. I believe Mitt Romney is a great idea man. It's just that he hasn't stated them clearly what these ideas are to the people.
Lee, were they clear to you?
Interesting that he's a great idea man, because a few minutes ago you were describing him as an empty head and a Manchurian candidate. Mitt Romney actually spoke like an adult, two adults, about what it is. You see, when you go after him saying, what are the specifics? Those are not the things that any president is going to come into office and institute. The tax plan and the tax bill begins in the House of Representatives, and it will be written by the Congress, not by the president. The president has the ability to influence. A perfect example is Obama's health care law. The health care law is, 1,100, 1,600 pages long, has a gazillion things in there, and the Congress all put that in there, not President Obama. It was his broad principles that they then used as a Christmas tree for that bill. Romney will be able to come in and institute his principles, but the Congress will negotiate and put together the bill.
Oh, well, I'm aware of that, but go ahead.
I want to ask you a question. During the primary, those that were running against Romney said, this is not the guy to send up there against President Obama, because the issue of Obamacare, if that's what you want to do on day one, you're not going to be able to defend it because you created it in Massachusetts. Did Romney do a good job in separating what he did in Massachusetts from what Obamacare is all about? Because the president did reference on a number of times, well, basically, we got the idea from you. It was a Republican idea.
Yeah, we used your advisors.
Did he do a good job of inoculating himself against that charge that, you know, Rick Santorum and a lot of other Republicans, including Newt Gingrich, brought up in the primary?
Well, what Gingrich and Santorum brought up and the way they described it would happen is exactly what did happen. And Romney expressed himself exactly as they said he would. He wasn't real strong in defending that, but he said it was a state solution, and that's exactly what he said in the primary. Interestingly, a lot of the criticism of Romney that was issued a few minutes ago, and some of the things that have been said today that, you know, he's flip-flopped or he lied and all this kind of stuff, everything that Romney said in that debate is exactly what Romney has been saying for the last year. He didn't change anything. He has documented many, many times in both the debates and speeches he's made all of the exact precise concepts that he stood on the other night.
What about that concept of the rich, not taxing the rich, but only to a level from which he takes the number
of
deductions?
Well, he answered it perfectly.
I never heard that before.
He answered it perfectly.
It is a good answer.
He answered it perfectly in that debate, just as he has answered it many, many times, in that the tax the rich is not taxing the rich. It's taxing small business. Yeah. Because there are millions of small businesses that pay that tax rate, and when they pay it, they will not be employing employees.
I think the key thing about that debate is that Romney did not live up or down to the image that the television campaign, Obama's television campaign, has created.
Or
he was not a boogeyman. He was not a horrible guy.
It's exactly
what
happened
smart.
With George
He showed
Bush.
Up. He looked
was
good.
Not
That's
an
right.
idiot, and he proved that.
That's right. Dan, you were making a point.
Well, I think that Leah has a point that, but the thing is that Romney never really responded to Obama's point that he wants to set up a plan that will not tax small businesses who keep workers here, who keep employees here, but he is willing to impose greater taxes for people who ship jobs overseas.
Well, that's a great thing to say. That's a great thing to say, but in fact, the result of Obama's policies is to do exactly that. For example, Obama's saying that we reward companies for moving overseas. There's nothing anywhere and in the tax code in any way whatsoever that companies are rewarded for moving overseas. If you move your company, whether it's from Nevada to California or New York to Illinois, or if you move it to Mexico, you receive the tax deductions for the costs of moving. That's not rewarding a company for moving overseas.
There is no such thing. In those three cases, Lee, shouldn't there be someone who should be punished on a tax? I'll take Illinois and I'll take Colorado, but when you move it to Mexico, there should be at least something that the federal government gets back on that.
Why?
Because you're hurting the economy. Business,
really?
Yeah, you're hurting the economy when you move jobs.
Why don't
overseas?
We stop hurting the businesses so that they don't want to move overseas? Well, they're moving because we're hurting their ability to do business.
They're
moving
for
because cheap labor is where they're moving. I think you know
Craig,
that.
Craig,
well, clearly comment. They're moving for cheap labor.
Oh, I think clearly,
but,
Stephanie.
Romney defended that extraordinarily well. First of all, he said, "You know, I've been in business for 25 years, and I never
that was a good line.
Never knew that you weren't taxed on overseas employment.
The Democrats
and
were victimized by their own
clear.
Talking points,
and the
their
other
own
thing
campaign
is,
points on that.
What
one.
You know, what we're getting lost in the weeds here is understanding that when and one of the issues that wasn't talked about was trade. But one of the things is when you do have employment overseas and so on, what you are doing in return is you're lowering the cost of goods, you're opening up the trade, you're opening up economic activity in a way that we benefit from here as well. So, you know, it is not the case that by shipping everyone overseas,
we benefit in the short term. I'm sorry, we benefit in the short term. But in the long term, is this economy going to grow if no factories are going to start here because it's cheaper to start factories in Tunisia or wherever we're going to start them, okay? That's a plan that the federal government can say we can incentivize for you to put that in Mokena or in Manuka or someplace like that. We can make it an incentive for you to do that. And that's what That's what the federal government should be doing.
And there's no question. I agree that that's where, you know, where we incentivize. But let's look at Democratic governors across the country, as well as this Democratic administration. What areas are way down? When you break out the jobs report, we are losing jobs in manufacturing at unbelievable rate. The point is that policies in states that are anti-business, that are anti, though, and as well as this administration, they're scaring people away with producing those jobs.
Well,
we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border, now in our 32nd year. Nice to have you with us this Sunday night from Chicago. Bruce Dubon back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Dan Walsh is here. It's the first time he's been on the broadcast. He is a Democrat. He is a public defender in the county of Cook, where this program comes from, for 8.5 years. Graduate of John Marshall Law School. Also did some acting, professional equity acting prior to that, and has been a longtime viewer and listener, and wrote us a little note, said you wanted to be on the air, and here you are tonight, and good to have you with us. Stephanie Hitt also joins us. Stephanie is a graduate of the Wellesley College and also the University of Virginia. She has also been a practicing attorney in her illustrious career, working with the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York City when Rudy Giuliani was the U.S. attorney, and also is a wife and mother, and you were here the other night, and it was always good to have you with us. Our Craig Sauter also joins us. He is an adjunct professor at DePaul University. He and his brother run a professional Democratic consulting firm that does media work for the Democratic Party, also author of numerous books, including Inside the Wigwam, which is the history of Chicago and its illustrious political conventions, of which there have been many. And Lee Newcomb also joins us. He is the recorder in McLean County, that is in central Illinois. And we were kidding during the break, originally from Hollywood, and you were on the dating game, and you were telling the story that you won and Tom Selleck lost.
Correct.
And that's got to be one of the great stories you tell everywhere.
And look what happened.
He never was elected to office.
I'm from Burbank, not Hollywood. And it's a point of pride for us that the studios are not in Hollywood. Well, Paramount, a couple are, but the main studio productions are in Burbank.
Now, what were the other shows that you were on?
I was on which was a short-lasting Fresh Your Luck, No Whammies, No Whammies, Big Bucks, Stop, and The Dating Game, and Card Sharks.
Did you win a lot of money?
Yeah.
Would you want to share it with us?
Sure. I won $23,000 on Fresh Your Luck. That was in 1985, so that'd be equivalent of about 50 now. I won a new car and $7,000 on Card Sharks. I won the date on the dating game.
Did you win your wife on the dating game?
Everyone always asks that. No, and I never saw her again.
And the newlywed.
The big one, I wasn't on the newlywed game. The big one, of course, was where I won a washer and dryer.
Wow. Oh, very impressive.
That was fun.
All right. You cleaned up.
I was mentioning that because I was mentioning the studio equipment around us that, back in those days, these massive big cameras and the studio equipment today is just tiny in comparison.
Yeah, just small high-definition cameras that we use now. By the way, let me just take a moment. This is sort of a personal thing if you're watching, and we should mention for those listening on radio, we are a national radio show, as you know, on a lot of radio stations, but also in Chicago, we're a television show. And if you're watching this on television, you'll notice that I've got a couple of bandages in a couple of spots. This past week, I went into my dermatologist, and a couple of these spots are cancerous, so I'm dealing with some skin cancer issues. So if I look a little blotchy or I have an occasional bandage on my face, you will know that I did not lose a fight. I'm fighting the battle of skin cancer. Let's go to Luis, listening to us in Des Plaines, Illinois, on our flagship station, WLS.
excuse me. Hi. I'm just an average Joe, or can I say
You're an average
one.
Luis.
An average one. There you go. And I couldn't help but to be taken back by the hypocrisy in the debate when Obama kept saying, well, you know, you're not getting to specifics. You know, you don't give us any specifics. I clearly remember during the Obama campaign that he gave no specifics either. As a matter of fact, he was for all this hope and change, and everyone was asking, well, what kind of change? What kind of change? And I remember this video that went viral of this woman thought she was going to receive free gasoline from Obama if he got elected into office. And everything was very vague. All he touted was fundamental change. Well, we now know what the fundamental change is now. But there were really no specifics given about how he was going to go about doing anything. You could look back at all his tapes, all his speeches.
Louise, very good point, and I would say you could probably say that about every challenger that's ever run for president.
It's the burden of every challenger that they don't have a huge staff that can put together their position papers.
Well, in fact,
if they do put them together, they don't even particularly know the people who did put it together.
I want to ask a question. Thanks very much, Louise. I want to come back to calls just a moment. I want to get a sense from everybody that's here now. Well, we're going to start with the Democrats. If Mitt Romney wins, how's America going to change? What's the change? Everybody's saying this is a defining moment. The sides are split. They will take us down different roads. America will be a different place. Do you really believe that, Dan?
Well, I remember in 1968 when Richard Nixon won, and I was, you know, so sad. My mom told me it will get better, and she told me that we just lived through it as Americans. We always lived through it, and I think that. No, America will always be the same place. But one of the things is, though, the question is with the media and with the Tea Party movement and with the right-wing extremists, could America go to a dangerous place? And I think that that is my question. Mitt Romney does not seem to be someone who is willing to stand up to the right-wing extreme in his party. And if the Republican right wing were to grab a stronghold in both the Senate and the Congress.
Do you think he was throwing red meat to the right wing at that debate?
No, but I don't think he has the guts to stand up to him when he becomes a president.
What does he need to stand up to? I'm curious because I would probably be considered one of those right-wing evil people.
What
does he need to stand up to me on?
Well, you need to stand up to. Yeah. Not just you, but you need to stand up to people like the Koch brothers and people who are the wealthy class.
You mean the Koch brothers who are libertarian and who believe in free abortion rights and marriage for homosexuals and all that stuff? Those Koch brothers?
No, I'm
wondering where the right wing is he has to stand up to, because they clearly are not it. Okay, so who's the right wing he needs to stand up to?
He needs to stand up to the people who are selling this country down the river by
Give
not
me
taxing
an issue.
Taxation of the wealthy. If you were to look mm-hmm. back in the 1950s, where the wealthy class was being taxed mm-hmm. in this country, they're being taxed at a much higher rate. And we saw a great build out and a great build up
of
the middle class.
I'm not
a
wealthy person. I never have been. My family isn't.
No, you're not.
And I believe.
Be harmed.
Go ahead, Lee. Okay, I believe very strongly. That and that I identify very much with blue collar working people. That's the neighborhood I live in. Okay, that's the neighborhood I live in. That's how I grew up. My first jobs were factory floor jobs. Okay, now those are the people I identify with, and I know how those people get jobs. Those people get jobs for companies that are successful. And the reason I believe that tax rates should not go up to supposedly tax the wealthy is I know what it'll do. It'll drive millions of people out of work. So you think that the Mitt Romney needs to stand up to me because I believe in working people, and you want to drive them out of work?
Let me give you a great
Explain
example.
Explain that
give
to
you great,
me.
Let me give you a great example. The president of GE was on 60 Minutes talking about this huge billion-dollar factory he was going to build. And you know how many employees that place was going to hire? It was going to be basically robots, and they're going to be 18
people. GE
isn't
where most of the jobs are.
Okay, I understand that. I understand
most
that.
Most jobs
my
in this
point
country
is
are
that
small
the factory
business.
Build-out and the – Now, small business, you're talking about what most people need are sustainable jobs where they're going to work for 30
more than
years.
Half the economy, 70% of all new jobs are created in small businesses which pay their taxes at the individual income tax rate. If you do tax the wealthy, you end all of those jobs.
Those people are not
I'm going to interject here for a moment. Craig Sauter, I want to get your reaction to the question again. If Mitt Romney is elected, What's going to happen to the country?
Well, as a historian who's written about a lot of presidents, I think that we can feel confident that the country will come through no matter what, whether or not it's a bad president.
So it isn't a pivotal moment. It isn't a pivotal moment.
Well, you know, in this particular debate, one of the things that I'm sure that drove Chris Matthews crazy was that the president said nine times that I agree with you, or probably he says the Mr. Romney and I probably agree on this, and then went their separate ways on specifics there. So it will be a different country if supposing the Congress is Republican as well and they're able to pass the things, that a lot will be shifted back to the states, and there will be a lot more.
Now, I want to ask our Republicans.
A lot of programs are going to be cut.
I want to ask our Republicans the same question, flip it. What happens if Barack Obama gets reelected? Because there's a lot of conservatives that think that he's going to take the country and it's going to be a hard shift to the left if he gets Congress, which is debatable.
We're going to see a lot of the same. We're going to see stagnant growth. You know, there's all this talk about creating 4.5 million jobs. Well, in a normal recovery, we're looking at 9 to 12 million jobs should have been created. So we're looking at dribbles and drabbles of slow economy. I think I have to say I agree with Craig in this sense is, despite maybe some of the stifling policies that are slowing down this recovery, Americans are Americans, and they're going to get out there, and they're going to create, and they're going to try to grow, and they're going to do it. The question is, I think really, is where will it happen faster? You know, under whom will it be faster? And what we've seen is, you know, 43 months of hovering around 8% unemployment. That's not good. So we're going to continue to see slow things. You know, we haven't even gotten into the issues of
Europe. Lee's response. What does America look like another 4 years of Obama?
I'll disagree with all three panelists. I believe if Obama is reelected, I'm very fearful about the future of my country, because Obama is not a president in the mold of Bill Clinton, George Bush, you know, Democrat, Republican, back and forth. Democrats tend to be a little more liberal, pro-labor union, that type of thing, higher taxes. Obama is fundamentally does not like us, I believe, as a people. He does not like our law. He doesn't like who we are. And he says over and over, and with his policies, he has declared he wishes to fundamentally change who we are as a country.
To make us fair, to live up to our creed.
To make us exactly that,
a socialist country. On that little verbal bomb, we're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Houston, Texas, where Carlos is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Oh, that was so beautiful. Wednesday was a beautiful time. I believe Romney's going to win this. And you asked, what would happen to America if Romney won? The very next day, jobs will be created. People will start investing in this country again, because they're going to believe that Romney is going to start the process of turning around the last 100 years. Not going to stop with Romney. This is going to be a continuous fight, probably to the day we die, and our children are going to have to continue it. But at least we have lived to see freedom come back to this country.
All right. Thanks for your call, Dan. I want to give you an opportunity to respond to Lee's comment about what the country will be like in his view, Obama would turn the country hard left.
Well, he hasn't done that so far. We don't have a hard left country at all. Matter of fact, I think one of the most confusing things about Barack Obama is that he is a leftist. I think that's a bad attack from him. I think he's been very pro-business, and I think that, you know, he's been very good with Wall Street. I think he's done a great job of monitoring them, and that only brings security to the markets, and that's the purpose for that. Pro-business in Detroit. Definitely, and workers in Ohio and Michigan, those are all pro-business things. National defense. So I don't know how you would call him a hard a left guy at all.
And to say that he doesn't love the country or that betrays the country.
I said he doesn't like us.
That's totally ridiculous.
I don't believe he likes us.
Who's the us in that sentence, Lee? Who's the us? It's not me. I feel like Obama likes me.
I don't believe he likes the fundamental culture that is America.
Well, it's a broad and it's a very diverse culture.
It is.
Okay?
Isn't it? In one sense and in another sense.
That's the best thing about America.
What specifically doesn't he like?
You know, he constantly goes after the cultural norms that have been ours
Like he what? Goes name after, one. Name okay, one, please.
He goes after the Muslim thing quite a lot.
What do you mean? After
what do you mean?
He stood before the United Nations last week and talked about anybody who would insult the Prophet will not be tolerated. I forget the exact words, but the point
those
is,
are definitely not his exact
that's a
words.
Part of our, no, those aren't exact words, but the religious tolerance.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of that. That goes back to the founders of the Constitution.
But you see,
religious freedom.
The fundamental thing that he was talking about is the fact that he was not defending was freedom of speech.
Well, you should have freedom
anybody,
of speech. Freedom, you should not
he
be
should
a,
have freedom
you
of
should
speech,
not be,
but
you should not be totally obnoxious. And,
really?
Yeah, I don't believe
actually,
you should. But
you are now defining exactly what concerns me about this so much. You know, we have to control speech a little.
There's
but
a
let
level
me tell
of
you
dignity
something.
That you should,
I'm a Christian.
You have when you're making a movie,
I'm a Christian, and for the last 20 years, I've been subject as Catholics and Mormons and all kinds of people who identify on the Christian side of things, have been subject to incredible, incredible public insults. You know, there was the Virgin Mary made out of dung, and there was the Piss Christ, a crucifix in a bottle of urine.
After the artist, then.
I'd like to know something. Where were the people out killing people and burning buildings down because of those things? There weren't any. You know what we did?
We wrote letters to the editor.
I think Western civilization was much more tolerant and much more respectful of that.
But
and
he
you're
didn't
about a
defend
different world
freedom of speech. He said it won't be tolerated, as you just said.
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing and that it really frustrates is, and we can get into this, is there is this attack from the administration on this thing called the wealthy in America. Mm-hmm. And when we, as Americans, we like to think that, I mean, wealth comes from initiative and get up and go and all the hard work. And what we've heard from this president.
An inheritance.
Are not that, you know.
Six of the most wealthy people in this country got their money from inheritance.
We're talking about what? Okay, let's talk
what's
about the wealthy.
Incentive?
Anyone
what's
who makes
initiative?
More than $250,000 is considered wealthy. Now
they consider them wealthy, but
that,
I don't think they are wealthy.
According to this administration, anyone who makes $250,000 is wealthy.
For purposes
of
taxes.
Who are the people that make that? They are the people that get up every day. They start a business. They make a job. They find people. They go out. They invest in a business. They come up with the ideas. Those people, that is, in many ways,
hard.
The essence
some
of
some of them
America.
Do.
They're
you're
rewarded
right.
For it.
Some of them do.
But we are. We are going to
do,
be
Stephanie,
punished
and some
for
of them
it.
Do, and they get some of the best protection in the world. They live in a great society. And it
but
all comes with
protection
a...
Because
I'm talking about police, fire, sewer, water. All of these things cost money. An army to defend your
correct.
Borders. Okay,
which
all of these things cost money.
Taxes paid for.
Which, right, they pay, which, but they are sure. trying
they,
not to pay taxes on their
no,
money.
They're not.
Now, here's the thing. Now, listen,
that
Lee.
Is not true.
Listen,
one
Lee.
One at a time. One at a time.
Sure.
Dan,
go ahead.
Dan,
Lee,
Dan, Dan.
Listen, I really, really respect your position, but I want to say that the idea that having a lot of money is bad is not something I believe in. I hope to have a lot of money someday, okay? But that doesn't mean that that money should not be taxed. Okay.
Here's
all right.
The problem.
Now,
neither do I.
All right.
Neither
now,
do I.
You take a guy like Mitt Romney, who's
what?
Got $42 million locked up in Swiss
good,
bank accounts and
right,
in the Cayman Islands.
What do you think
okay.
Is the right tax rate? What do you think a wealthy person?
There is no
be?
Such
well,
thing.
There
what,
is no
whatever
such thing.
Is most effective in terms of being able to pay.
But
for
it, has
the
it has to be on the table. It has to be on
the
table, Lee. Your guys take it off the table. You take it off
the table. One at a time.
They are equating wealth and success with having a lot of money, as if rich people who are successful in business, take that money, they hoard it, they keep it for themselves.
Do evil things.
I
and
would.
They do things with that. And guess what? That is not the case. Most people who use it to start small businesses, they reinvest it in their company. They come up with better ways so they can go out and hire more people. They then provide those jobs.
Okay.
That is what most rich people who make money do not sit in mattresses, stick it in the mattresses, keep it in the cells. We are not, you
where
know,
is the vast
counting up
majority
our cold
of
coins.
Mitt Romney's wealth right now. It is in a Swiss bank account or in the Cayman Islands. It is not being invested.
$13 million
okay.
That
so,
he made.
So,
does that make any difference?
Well, that makes a difference to the whole argument that having large amounts of money is something good because it's being reinvested in business is belied by your presidential candidate who's got his.
Sorry, but that's not true. I know.
Oh, okay.
You know, I know several very wealthy people that I've met, much like you, probably through politics. You meet people,
sure,
And of the several very wealthy people that I'm friends with, I admire them very much. Every single one of them began with nothing and started a company.
We have to say farewell to our guests in hour number one. Our Democrats this evening have been Dan Walsh and our Craig Sauter. Our Republicans have been Stephanie Hitt and Lee Newcomb. They will all be back with more guests when we continue on radio. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Lee Newcomb and Stephanie Hitt, and also welcoming Todd Stump. And Democrats are Craig Sauter and Dan Walsh. Phone lines remain open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. We'll be looking ahead to the vice presidential debate coming up this week between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan, and also talking a little bit about where this race for president is at the moment and whether or not everyone sort of believes, as the pundits are suggesting and as some of the polls are suggesting, that the race is tightening, and that one of the big issues now is to make sure that each side is able to rev up their base and get their base out, or else it's not going to mean much on Election Day. Joining us in this hour is Todd Stump. He is a political consultant, serves on the board of America's Future Foundation, also published articles in Human Events and Daily Caller. And he was at our big debate party this past week at the museum. And you made one of the you offered the first analysis of that debate. And it was specifically about Romney's response on Medicare. And you thought that had significant political legs. Explain.
It was more the president's response about Social Security and Medicare, and that he acknowledged for the first time, I think, of any national candidate for federal office on the Democratic side, that the Republicans do not advocate any change to Social Security or Medicare benefits for people aged 55 or older. But they won't generally admit to it.
One of his nine agreements.
I beg your pardon?
It was one of his nine agreements that he agreed with Romney.
Oh, I see, during the debate, yes. And that was a first, and that took an arrow out of the Democratic quiver. It's going to be very difficult for them now at any level to argue that that is the Republican agenda. And I think that is it's a relief, I think, to the Republicans, and I think it's really going to hurt the Democrats.
By the way, that triggers a discussion on where the polls are and where you think the campaign is at the moment. In the key battleground states, obviously, where Social Security could be obviously always an important, as it is in all states, but obviously Florida with its large elderly population is always focused on when you're talking about Social Security. That is now a dead heat between Obama and Romney, according to the Real Clear Politics averages. In Virginia, it's Obama 47.2, Romney 46.8. That's just 0.4%. In Ohio, Obama holds a 49-46 point lead. In North Carolina, the lead is switched over to Romney at 48.4 to Obama's 47.6. In Iowa, 48.5 for the president, 45% for Romney. And in Colorado, where the debate took place, dead even at 47 each. There's that 47% that Romney was talking about. And in the Real Clear Politics national averages, Obama now 48.4, Romney 47.0, 1.4 lead within the statistical margin of error. So this race is a dead heat. What, in your view, Dan Walsh, what do you think should be the specific focus of the Obama campaign between now, not in the next debate, but now the rest of the way?
Well, the first thing you should focus on is the next debate, because the, you know, obviously the performance was not up to par. So he should be prepared for that next debate. But you know, going forward, I think it's still to get out the message about economic justice and economic fairness. And I think he did make that point that he did want to focus on, you know, talk about not fair treatment for the millionaires and billionaires, but fair treatment for everybody. And so I think he's doing a pretty good job with that. But that would I think he needs to focus on the economic issues.
Stephanie Hitt also joins us. She is our Republican. And your reaction or your suggestion as to what is likely to happen on Thursday night in the vice presidential debate.
Well, I think one of the important things will be is for Ryan to continue with the narrative that we've heard from Romney, and that is the connection of the policies and how they will directly relate to the increase in jobs and growth in the economic sphere. And that's going to be something I think we're going to hear more and more about. One of the things that Romney did very successfully was to relate each policy to, in fact, how it will increase jobs. And Ryan, I think, will continue that.
Let's go to Steve in Gretham, New Hampshire, listening to us on WNTK. Nice to hear from the callers tonight. Always good to hear from New Hampshire. Go ahead, Steve.
Bruce. All right. You asked the question earlier in the first hour, how the election would be, how the U.S. could be changed. So I'd just like to mention a few things.
Sure.
And then some other points, and then you guys will discuss it. Number one, Supreme Court could be very vital, which would have a change that could be affect the country for the next 20 years. Second thing is a lot of Romney's foreign affair advisors are the neoconservatives who got us into Iraq incorrectly and who appear to be more than happy to think that we should have a military presence forever in the Middle East. Third thing, I think was Stephanie talked about, I'm a job creator. I have 25 employees. Our business, our tax rates went up to 39.6% under Clinton, we did not all of a sudden say, well, our tax rates went up, we can't be any more profitable. We had opportunities, we took advantage of those opportunities, and the difference between 35 and 39.6% is not going to affect most business people. It's a straw man argument. Now, I'm not saying tax rates of 60 and 70%, but that difference in tax rates on the amount of income over a certain level, be it a quarter of a million or a half a million or $1 million, is not going to affect entrepreneurs from doing what they have always done, which is, you know, figure out where there's a market for something and then take advantage. If there's
Steve, how do you pay your taxes?
How do I pay? With a check.
Come on. I mean, what tax structure are you? Are you a subchapter S? Or are you a C-Corp or what?
No, I'm an S-Corp.
Okay, you're an S-Corp.
Yeah.
What kind of business do you do per year?
By the way, who is speaking?
This is Lee Newcomer, Newcomer.
Okay,
Republican.
Lee. Okay.
What's your sales per year?
We do about $4 million in volume. We're in a financial service business.
Okay.
Financial advice.
Advice. Okay. Yeah. So you would be the kind of firm that does not employ a lot of lower sort of blue-collar working type people. So I can certainly see where your explanation would be that the difference in tax rates would not make a lot of difference in your business. However, if you're a small manufacturing business, manufacturing, I don't know, lights or horseshoes or toasters or whatever, you know, small things, your workforce is primarily a blue-collar workforce. That's where those jobs come from.
But if I'm a manufacturer and I can earn X amount of profit,
well, you're not that kind of business at all.
Because it goes from 35 to 39%.
Okay, but you're not that kind of business at all. And the people I know who own those kind of businesses, that kind of a tax rate increase has a massive impact on whether or not they hire. I'll tell you something else that's massively, and there are lots of studies right now of business owners that are reflecting this, polls.
You know, I just have a question for you.
That's
In the 1990s, Clinton went to 39.6%, and I understand we had a technology revolution, the creation, basically the establishment of the Internet on a worldwide basis, but businesses invested and did very well in the 1990s and absorbed the 39.6% tax rate.
Steve, we've got to move on. Thanks for your call, 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, Washington, California, and Illinois. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont in Chicago. Let's head west to Fresno, California, where Maureen is listening to us on KMJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment about the debate, and I especially like how Romney was unapologetic about his energy policy. I am both a conservative and a fiscal conservative, mm-hmm. Although I'm a bit of a, you know, I do care about the poor. I do care about the poor, and I am disabled myself. I am an attorney. But and so I no longer am upper middle class, but I live on about $850 a month. Mm-hmm. The gas prices in California are now at $5, going up to $6 a barrel. And through Romney's and through Obama's administration, I live on rice and beans and no meat. And even the price of a 10-pound bag of rice, I have to count every penny. I know the prices in the grocery stores, not even talking about products, but just the essential food to keep people alive, has gone up about 100%. Now, there are so many reasons why we need to utilize our domestic oil. OPEC, it does not set prices according to supply and demand. They have supply and they basically set prices however they want. And I think with the problems that are going on in the Middle East, I even think where some of our profit, our money from our gas and petroleum products are financing even a lot of the terrorism that's going on.
Maureen, I want to get everyone's response to what you've said thus far. Craig Sauter, one of our Democrats, I want to let him to respond as well. And let me sort of broaden the question, because obviously Maureen paints a word picture of her personal experience. I thought one of the strong moments in that debate was when both candidates were asked about sort of the role of government. And I thought that Romney's answer to that question was somewhat wrapping himself in the flag. But I thought his description of what life is like in America for so many people, I think we saw a side, his ability to paint the word picture of the people around their kitchen table dealing with, the loss of a job or scrimping and saving for their children's college education. I mean, I thought that that showed at least a sensitivity
for
middle-class life.
Yeah, it was definitely a good ploy to show that he had some kind of compassion. He brought back the compassionate conservative idea. But the president's point on this is trying to build ladders of opportunity for the middle class, for people who are in the lower middle class, that you're not going to move in this society unless you have educational opportunity. You're not going to move unless there's job opportunities. And the job thing seems to be turning around, and about the question of investment that's been sitting on the side for a long time because people are uncertain once the election's over. And if Obama wins, they're going to invest that money. So I think this cycle of the economy, and it has been crushing on the middle class. All they has to do is read the headlines to know that.
What about that lady that just called? What about her?
What about her? She has a skill. She's a lawyer. She's obviously educated.
No, address what she said.
On what point?
The price of food.
The price of everything is going up.
You see, that to me is the
Democratic responsibility. But
you see, that's what I see as the Democratic response. I see that in both of you, and I see it manifestly in the president.
What do you mean?
Don't believe Democrats care about working people and about people at the lower end. Because when I asked you, you just said, it's just that way. It isn't just that way. The price of food and the price of gas for ordinary working people has massively changed. Massively changed the lifestyle of people.
Rightly.
It is driving middle-class families under. And what does this president say? You keep saying that Romney doesn't have a plan. What is the president's plan to drive down and address the cost of food and energy for ordinary working families?
The answer is all of his
policies are driving those prices up, and he says, I will not change them.
Let's let Dan respond. And by the way, I want to put it in context for people that did not hear at the beginning of the broadcast. You are a public defender.
Yes.
Last 8.5 years. So you were dealing with people who are the lower rung of the socioeconomic ladder who've become involved in the criminal justice system. So you hang around with a lot of the people that need help.
I have a unique perspective on life.
Yes, you
do. Yeah, I do. I think that the response is that to say that Democrats don't care about middle class people or about people who are starving, I mean, that's really – that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the question is that what I hear from Republicans and what they are fomenting amongst the Tea Party and amongst the right wing is that people are not paying their fair share of taxes. Now, do you think that woman in Fresno, California is not paying her fair share of taxes? That's the Republican argument.
She's paying the tax on the price of food and gas. That's what she's paying the
price
on.
You're right.
And that's a tax on her life.
It absolutely is. And what Democratic policies are trying to do, if you would have let the programs get, is as far as making the middle class an attractive place to be.
Her core question was about the price of energy and how we're going to get it. There are definitely issues around energy having to do with trade balance, having to do with distortions when it comes to the price of food, right, that people don't see and necessarily connect. And there are also foreign policy choices that we're forced to make based on not producing our own energy, right? But the underlying point is it's just immoral.
Absolutely.
It's immoral to drill for to ask the Nigerians, to ask the Brazilians, to ask the Iraqis to drill for oil and gas when we have abundant reserves here in across different types of energy right here, and not unproven renewable energies like wind power and solar power. Things that can be done today.
You do understand drilling has gone up under the president.
Only because,
not on federal land, but on private investors. And that is true.
No, only because they were permitted. The permits were issued and put in the pipeline, so to speak, under President Bush. Permitting has dropped dramatically under the Obama administration, and we're going to pay the price of that coming up in the next 4 years unless we have a president like President Romney who will increase permitting on federal lands and private lands.
Well, for 40 years, we've been saying we need to get energy independence.
Yeah, it's both parties.
And it's both parties. It's resolved. Now, the fact that right now there's a new wing of the Republican Party who's advocating for massive drilling in a Sarah Palin kind of way is absolutely ridiculous. We're going to have these problems forever, and we have to deal with them in a smart way.
But there's a bigger problem here, and that is that the Democrat response to a very very important and very specific problem, and that is, you know, the price of gas, the price of everyday life, so to speak, is to say we're going to tax the rich, we're going to tax the wealthy, and there's no way that the dots are connected in how that putting more money into the federal government is somehow going to make everyday Americans' life better and easier. We need to have specific policies, and that's one thing that Romney has done, has addressed exactly those areas where people's lives are dramatically affected, and energy is one of them.
Mike in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much for taking my call. And the debate, Governor Romney came out swinging, taking the offensive. He used names of people who needed help. He mentioned them. Governor Romney mentioned the postponement of the oil pipeline through America. Romney mentioned better use of private lands for oil and coal. And Governor Romney mentioned the bankrupt solar energy company supplied by federal funds, which could have been used, this money could have been used for teachers. And President Obama continually looked at Jim Lehrer, the moderator, like he wanted the debate to end. He was throwing in the towel. And also your comment, Jim, Lee Newcomb mentioned freedom of religion in America. And that's under attack by the Obama administration.
Very much so.
Colleges are forced, and hospitals are now going to be forced to use abortion sterilizations. That's a requirement, not a demand, which is an infringement of Catholic doctrine, infringement of liberty. And Catholic voters need to know this.
We're going to move on. Helen in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS AM 89. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. My purpose in first calling you pretty much addressed in your first hour, and that in this debate last Wednesday, I found it disturbing that Mitt Romney told so many things that were basically untrue, and to be a public that doesn't need to or feels like they need to take the time, well, does that sound right? Maybe I should look that up. So I went to several different sources to check many things out, and this is what scares me, that old cliche, you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. Mitt used to be one man when he was governor of Massachusetts. Then he became another man when he was debating all the other Republicans in those presidential debates. And now, so either he was either yelled at by his whomever.
What was the specific lie or half truth that you stood out to you?
Well, the thing about bringing up the you're taking $760 million out of Medicare to pay for your Obamacare, whereas that's not true.
It's absolutely true.
Todd Stump has a question for you. He's one of our Republicans. He wants to respond to you, Helen. Go ahead, Todd.
Well, the first thing I'd ask is, who made the Tampa Bay Times the arbiter of what's true and not true in this race? People cite PolitiFact constantly, and they don't realize it's just a column published by the Tampa Bay Times. And how they became the authority, just because it has the words politics and fact in their column, somehow that's become the authority, and it's nonsense. Regarding the cuts,
a Republican paper,
I would like to say that factcheck.org is a division of the Annenberg Project, which is a reputable organization.
Annenberg Challenge.
The Annenbergs were friends of the Reagans and a very conservative organization.
And that organization, that conservative organization, started the Annenberg Challenge, which had Bill Ayers and Barack Obama as directors. I would not call it conservative
Chicago
any longer.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Around the table this evening, we have Todd Stump is here. He's one of our Republicans. He is a political consultant. He serves on the board of America's Future Foundation. And in 25 words or less, what is America's Future Foundation, Todd?
It's an organization that promotes classical liberalism, conservative thought, but mostly having to do with free market principles, free minds and free markets. And we want to cultivate young leaders in the freedom movement.
Stephanie Hitt also joins us. She was born in Charlottesville, Virginia, graduated from Wellesley, as well as the University of Virginia Law School. And also you spent some time also working for Rudy Giuliani and the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York City. Lee Newcomb also joins us, a longtime guest on this program. He is the clerk of McLean County. That is in central Illinois.
Recorder.
What did I say?
Clerk.
I'm at the recorder. Also joining us this evening is R. Craig Sauter. What does R stand for?
Richard.
Richard Craig Sauter.
My mother wanted middle names.
He is an adjunct professor at DePaul University, where he teaches politics and media, and also works during the cold months. He goes south to Miami-Dade College. Very smart to going south when it gets cold in Chicago. And also has written numerous books on politics, including Inside the Wigwam, which is about the political history and of conventions here in the city of Chicago. Chicago still has had more conventions.
25.
Than
25. Closest is 13.
And also joining us, making his maiden voyage, is Dan Walsh. For 8.5 years, he has been a public defender in the Cook County court system, and also once upon a time was an actor. And let's take a moment. How did you switch from being an actor to being a public defender? You obviously went to law school.
Obviously, I went to law school.
John Marshall.
And I had to hang up my makeup kit and do that. But
you perform in court now.
But I do perform in court. And a lot of the skills that I learned in theater and training, acting training, do translate very well. But it definitely was just one of those things where I made a career decision in the middle of my life. It was kind of a midlife crisis, and decided to go to law school. And I never looked back. I met my wife there. And we're married, and we have three kids together now. So,
you said in the last segment that because of your chosen field now,
yeah,
you have a different perspective. Because of what you see every day, are you more liberal? Are you more conservative? Are you more moderate? I mean, you're clearly a Democrat. You grew up in a Democratic family. A lot of people in the court systems in Cook County are Democrats.
Sure.
But how has your life or perspective in life been changed by the people that you deal with every day?
Well, I see a lot of young men that really are intelligent, bright people who are just really living in a bad situation and caught up in, with no economic opportunities. You know, most of the industry has left the south side of Chicago and the west side of Chicago. I see a lot of fatherless homes, and my heart goes out to them. But, you know, obviously if somebody's an adult and commits a crime, I can't I you know, have to level with them about what the facts of the case are. But, you know, I do see the devastation of economic leaving Chicago, the fact that there's no industrial base, really had a terrible effect on the people on the south and west side of Chicago.
Is there anything several weeks ago on this program I talked about, for those listening around the country, we've had an epidemic of violence on the south and west sides, the lower economic areas of the city of Chicago. There are murders and shootings of an enormously obnoxious and obscene level in the city of Chicago. I asked on the air whether or not there is anything or any opportunity that the President of the United States could do. Could he use the bully pulpit of the presidency to reach out to the men and women who live in those neighborhoods, many of whom lived in you talk about terrorism in networks or in neighborhoods around the United States. There are people living in terror within 10 minutes of where we are doing this program. Is there anything that the president could do to reduce the level of violence in his hometown?
Well, I did, you know, speak to a lot of friends of mine who work in the office about this, who did grow up on the south side of Chicago. And they recall, and they're about my age, and I'm in my 50s now, that in the 70s and the 60s, there was always a place to go after school. There were programs, there were, you know, either through the city or the state or federal government that kind of helped out, you know, because, you know, it's always been kind of an economically disparaging area. And so, yes, I think the president could get some fund, if he could get some funding into the city of Chicago to help out with after-school programs, all of those things would help. Anytime you show someone some attention as far as that, and it's positive attention,
you have to
say, could he say something again? And he said this during the primary against Hillary Clinton on a couple of occasions, and there was positive response to it. Above and beyond a government program which gives an opportunity. And by the way, there is a place for them. I don't argue against those. But as a husband and as a father and as a terrific role model, what could he be saying to the fatherless homes, the young boys that mostly many become your clients? What could he be saying to them about the value of life, that you don't kill people, you don't take guns, you don't go through a neighbor? Is there anything he could do using the bullet
pulpit? Bruce, I think he does say it when he speaks to the NAACP and when he does speak to black leadership groups. He does say that.
But
does that get the type of press?
But the point is, those people who are doing those things are not at the NAACP convention.
Yeah, they're so dislocated, it's unbelievable.
Is there anything else they could be doing?
And he has, as you pointed out, he's urged fathers to stay with their homes. I mean, that's the biggest thing here.
There are two things.
Stay in school.
There are two factors, I believe, from everything I've read, that account for the vast majority of this. One is education.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Okay. And we sit here in the democratically controlled Chicago area, where the Democrats have controlled the Chicago public schools. I think it's the largest school district in the nation for many, many years.
Yes.
And that school district is utterly, completely, and absolutely
dysfunctional
school district, about a 50% dropout rate, I believe it is. And the second reason is fathers. And we have both culturally and as government policy, we have driven down fatherhood and marriage. And we have said over and over and over and over to this generation, it does not matter that you are married. You don't have to be married. And when you say that to a culture repeatedly, and these kids all follow our advice that they don't need to be married, go out and, you know, do whatever you want and have sex with whoever you want and father babies all you want, and there's no consequences to it, what happens is what we've got. We are paying the piper for what we've been doing for about 20 years.
I agree with you. And I think that I don't think the president ever advocates that for it.
President
but I do want to speak to you about the education, which is that, you know, recently we had strikes, and we had a strike in Lake Forest, we had a strike in Chicago, and we found out that it had really nothing to do with the fact that the teachers are members of unions, it has to do with what the quality of the children are that come to the school. Now, I'm not saying some kids are bad kids and some kids, but some kids come from broken homes. They travel to three or four types of gang territories.
Then why are the charter schools in Chicago doing boffo?
The mayor has said that those schools are great. Who? Mayor Emanuel?
I mean, the market is saying so. I mean,
the market does say so, but if the test scores are the test scores, they're not being.
Then you might be measuring
Carol
the wrong
Marine.
Thing.
Read Carol Marine.
If the market signal says that these things are oversubscribed fivefold, tenfold, then maybe you're not measuring something that the market knows.
Here's something to me. I go back to the
same thing
I've said over and over. I don't identify with political parties so much. I identify with my political philosophy, and with the Republicans are closest to my fight, it's fine. The Democratic Party today, and both of you tonight have demonstrated it to me, don't give a rat's rear end about poor people.
Now listen, look,
you're sitting here defending a school district
for which there is no defense.
So hang on, one more thing. Do you know where – you see,
I give credit
where you don't. I give credit to poor mothers in poor areas who are black who want
and
listen to me
by and large,
who want the best
they
for their,
their
kids
teachers and they like their kids and
second?
They supported the union
would you
okay
hang on a
it's
second?
Only the media
would you hang
there.
On a second so I can make my point
well,
my point is
point.
They want their kids out of those horrendous schools and your party says no. We will
so
not,
not
give you a ticket
no
out of the
Democratic
schools.
Party running
we
the school.
Well,
want
I think,
those
I think one of the big
unions.
Problems right. is the model of education that we have. One thing is that these kids are totally disassociated from the economic society around them. The schools should be redesigned in a certain way so that there's apprenticeships for every kid from eighth grade on, that they're shadowing some kind of adult who's going to work. And a lot of schools that are successful
teachers
around
won't
the country,
allow that.
Well, we don't know what they'll allow,
yes,
what they
we
won't.
Do.
Because
yes,
the mayor,
we do.
No, we don't. No,
they
we
will
don't.
Not
Lee,
allow that.
The mayor won't even listen to them, okay? He won't even listen to them. He wants to do all the decisions about education at the Chicago Board of Education. He will not listen to the teachers' union. That's all they asked for.
Why
there would not have been a strike if they would have listened to them.
Listen to the
folks,
parents.
Folks, we're going to move on. We're going to we got to move to Arcadia, California. Dave is listening to us on KGOE. Go ahead, Arcadia.
Yes, sir. I very much appreciate your show. And one thing I think that should be coming up, well, it's several things that should be asked in these so-called debates, but one that I think should be posed to both of them, certainly to Romney, is that you, sir, have an awful lot of big special interest money that you're receiving that's in your pockets. Do you think they expect anything in return for that? Or
well, it's not true, so, you know.
Well, they all have special interest money. Last month, the president raised $180 million, set a record in 1 month. $180 million, and he's raising money in Hollywood tonight.
Wasn't that 181 from mostly from private internet sources?
Well, it's
$181 million.
Both political parties. Both political parties have a lot of cat donors.
1-800-723-8289. We've got one more segment left. We've got callers on the line, and the guests are all revved up. Back shortly from Chicago. Yeah. From Lexington, Nebraska to Lexington, Kentucky, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Let's head to Lexington, Nebraska, where Joe is listening to us tonight on POTUS on XM Sirius Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to touch on the point about where the country would be heading if Romney or Obama gets elected.
Yes,
and, I really am on the fence about both. But the way I see it is you need more than one term to turn around a recession. So this is my first voting year, so I right now are planning to vote for Obama, and just I think it would be a very stupid idea to give anyone else, but just send someone else in there and have them start from scratch. And in my eyes, it seems like Obama hasn't really messed up the country anymore. I mean, it could be a lot worse off.
Joe, are you open up Are you open right now to a live national 45-second pitch by a Republican to change your mind?
Sure.
All right, Stephanie, you're on. 45 seconds.
Well,
go.
We'll look briefly at history, and we have two Republican presidents that, using the same principles of lowering taxes and easing up on business regulation, both Reagan and Bush were able easily within their first terms to turn around recessions. And I suggest you read a book called The Forgotten Man by Amity Schles. And you'll see that the policies that we are pursuing under this current administration are very similar to what we saw under FDR. And what we now know is that this way, government control of the market, stimulation, it doesn't work. The Great Depression lasted way longer than it should have because of these reasons. So I say read the book, look at history, and you'll see where the changes will be.
There's your 45 seconds. Did she change your mind yet?
Still kind of on the fence. I mean,
okay.
Joe,
right,
go read that book, The Forgotten Man. It'll change your life.
You've got homework, Joe. Read the book.
That's a great
come
book,
on
by
back,
the way.
Come back in a couple of weeks before the election. Tell us whether you've switched your vote, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Thanks very much. Let's head to Steve in Wayne, Illinois on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Great show as always, guys.
Thank you.
I just want to point out something that's been really bothering me. Obama keeps saying that the Romney would be going back to the same Republican policies that got us into the fiscal problem back in 2008, and it's really pretty much a blatant lie. The Bush tax cuts had nothing to do with the financial meltdown. Democrat policies, which were the Community Reinvestment Act and the repeal of Glass-Steagall, both took place under Clinton, had way more to do with the financial meltdown.
With plenty of Republican votes.
Couldn't have got that without Republican support.
But it doesn't matter. I don't care whether Republicans voted for it or not. I'm saying that was the cause, and he keeps trying to pin it on the Bush tax cuts.
Do you agree with that, Stephanie?
I agree 100%.
I agree about 50.
One second. Go ahead, Todd, and then back to Steve.
I agree about 50%. I mean, the reason for the financial meltdown went for a million reasons. You know, there was so much capital out in the market chasing yield for pension funds and all the rest, and there weren't enough products to fill it. And so they came up with, you know, because there was demand out there, people came up with riskier and riskier
right.
products, and eventually it was going to collapse.
Yeah, so there are also models failing.
But it had nothing to do with tax cuts. No one has ever adequately explained how reduced tax levels caused the financial
disaster.
Dan Walsh.
Yeah, I just want to say that the Bush tax cuts and the tax cuts, the problem with that is right now how Americans are feeling is that the response to keeping the Bush tax cut is that it helps the job creators. And the problem right now is what I brought up that example in the earlier show about the GE plant is that the job creators are not creating these jobs. If they were because of the Bush tax cuts, they would still be creating them. And we still have the Bush tax cuts, and they're not creating the jobs.
Speaking of that, on the issue of jobs, before we go off the air tonight, I do want to talk about the jobs numbers. We did not talk a lot about them. One of the big stories about the numbers are they obviously were not as bad as they have been in recent months. And Jack Walsh, the former head of GE, sends a tweet suggesting that maybe the books have been cooked. Is that a legitimate issue to be discussed, whether or not the government is cooking the books or not? Or is that just a cheap shot from a Republican?
We were I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think everyone's the facts don't match up. When you have a rate that drops, 0.3%, and yet the number of jobs created were significantly, like 30 or 40% lower than the previous months. Then that is staggering.
And there was a readjustment on the previous 2 months. Yeah,
the opening up of the household surveys and adding that in, the problem is that now we have to go through the weeds to explain this number.
I'm
going to ask a political question. Who, in your view, is moved by those jobs numbers? Other than the media, which always makes them a day's story, who are moved by those?
Well, Democrats are moved by it because it's a confirmation that there's forward progress of some sort, and it's been a long, painful recession.
So
but
people
we
vote
see,
on that.
People, I don't think they do.
I will profit.
I don't think they do either. If you're out of a job,
people
nothing
vote
is worth
on their
it.
I recall the Bush quail at the end of his term before he lost, they bragged about a small adjustment in the gross domestic product. You know what? If you're talking about numbers, you really in politics, you need to talk about pros.
Here's the problem with the job numbers. Most people don't understand what they are. If you've got 100 people at your working population, 75 are working and 25 are not, everybody thinks that's 25% unemployment. It's not. If 20 of those people are on disability and say they're not looking for work after all the jobs, it's a 600,000 person survey.
If they're on disability, they can't work.
Wait a minute. If 5 people of the 100 report that they're looking for work, that's about a 6% unemployment rate. The unemployment, there are no additional jobs. No additional jobs.
If you have a job, hallelujah. If you're 23 million people and you don't have a job, keep looking. Maybe it'll come. On that note, we are out of time for this evening. Our Democrats this evening have been R. Craig Sauter from DePaul University, Dan Walsh, public defender, Stephanie Hitt. Stephanie, always nice to have you with us. Lee Newcomb, the recorder of McLean County in Central Illinois, and Todd Stump, businessman and all-around conservative with the America's Future Foundation. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, at the same time, don't forget, Thursday night, watch the Veep debate, because we will be discussing it next week on Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.